dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, SEC fans, and welcome in once again to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SBC Sports Talk. This is show 230, again brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center, all kinds of fun under one roof. They are located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way, open, of course, 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and you can find all kinds of good stuff there, including Cardo's Pizza. You have places where you can have parties and events. They've got the arcades, the super inflatable land, and, of course, Buckeyes Sports Bar, and soccer is typically going on about any time. You can give them a call, 740-773-PLAY. That's 740-773-7529, or look them up on the web at TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. And, of course, don't forget something that we continuously, John Bruce and I continuously mention to the management here at SVC Sports Talk. They, of course, have the limousine rentals, and you can give them a call and enjoy a luxurious state-of-the-art limousine or party van. So when you think of fun, think Triple Crown. That's their new tagline that I just invented for them. I will introduce these two fine young gentlemen just a second, but first, this just in.
Here's breaking news. It's being widely reported in the national press that media mogul, SVC Sports Talk host, language arts teacher, and PV baseball coach Shane Combs attended the Paint Valley Southeastern football game on Friday night. While thousands awaited his contribution to the SVC Sports Talk Twitter feed, Combs, however, took to the Twitter sphere to report on the quality of the food provided to him in the pregame meal, giving it the two thumbs up rating. For the news, this is Bruce Knox.
I had to get that update in there. I, you know, that was the highlight of my Friday night, was reading about the food that was provided to one Mr. Shane Combs just prior to the big game there on Friday night. So,
it's hard to argue with that. I mean, John, it was no more than 10, 15 steps through the gate, and
right.
You had your choice right there. Bruce, I went, as you could read on the tweet. I went with the noodles,
mm-hmm.
and that was outstanding. And then I made my way over to the concession and complimented that with a Panther burger,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a Diet Mountain Dew. I know John had some treats of his own there.
Wait a minute. So let me get this straight. So you were there, and of course you already described your menu. So yeah. John was there too. John was invited, yes, by the staff of
Before you go down the route that I think you're going to.
Wait a minute. Was Derek there too? Derek Webb? No,
Derek was flying solo that night, but we were working together through Twitter a little bit, yes. But before you go the route that you've been known to go,
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I did supply the John Bruce mobile with a little bit of gas. And mm-hmm. a little bit of food money. So I just wanted to throw that out there before I know you're going to drop the hammer on.
Okay. Here. Well, you know, I think I was pretty much the only SVC sports staff member that wasn't invited to this luxurious banquet affair that you guys partook in. And so, you know, last week I brought my A game, as you so pointed out. This just may influence my bump music choices tonight somehow.
Get the Vinton County AD to ever give you a Friday night off, you're free to join us anytime.
Well, I was off this past Friday night because we were away and, you know, just sitting here pretty much listening to various games and following the Twitter feed, you know, trying to – I had my SVC sports, you know, that pullover that you gave me. I had that on, a little chilly up here in the office. And so, you know, just kind of trying to hang out, but, you know. Okay, I'll just keep that in mind. That's good. All right.
Here we go.
Okay. So, welcome in Shane Combs and, of course, John Bruce. John, you didn't get a contribute there. Do you have anything else you wanted to bring up right now?
I was hoping to be able to get in the limousine, but yeah. I did have to take the Civic out.
Okay.
Very all right. Gas efficient.
Yes. So. Yeah. We're all about the environment, of course.
Right.
Well, Shane, seriously, you guys had a big weekend. We'll get to talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, next week you've got something coming up special here for John to do. And I wanted to kind of let you let that see the light of day through you. So why don't you go ahead and tell us what will we be asking John to do next week?
Many fans know that this particular SVC Sports Talk every year is the highlight of our volleyball team. John, it's an annual thing we've been doing, which I know, with you being a good, you know, a listener over the years, something I love doing, spend a lot of time on. And the thing that you have been able to really do for our soccer community is take our coverage next level. I can't tell you how much the people in the soccer, sport of soccer throughout boys and girls in the leagues appreciated that. And I kind of wanted to offer them the same type of thing next week. I thought using your own format, if you had come up with a way to name an all league for boys and girls, I thought that would really be a great way to cap off our regular season coverage and take some of our best teams into the postseason. And it's something that's new to our league. It's certainly not just new to our website. It's new to our league in general. So that's why I said this week, maybe just share a little bit of a little bit of the format in terms of the way you would go about naming an all-league soccer team, because you certainly don't want to cheat the defensive mm-hmm. players or goalies or different things. You'd want to get a way to get a lot of different people involved. Just maybe kind of share that and give kind of a preview, if you would, in the next week's show for the soccer community.
Well, when I played, I was a defender, so the defenders will not be left out of the team. I know one thing I talked to Trevor Thomas about when I was coaching up at Westfall for baseball was one of the things he always wanted to do was go position by position on like the all league team for baseball. So we're not loading up and like we'll say with all pitchers. So if we, my idea would be, you know, instead of loading up with all scorers, we're going to go position by position. So we'll have goalies, defenders, midfield, and forwards. I haven't really looked at it yet to see how many we would go with. One thing I've considered is going with, hey, I'm going to look at the girls teams in our league and say, well, maybe I'm going to build a team to go win a state championship, match up with some of these Cincinnati, Columbus schools mm-hmm. and kind of go with how I would go with that. Hmm. And then kind of the boys go the same way. I want to be able to highlight defenders, goalies, obviously midfielders, and I mean, we see the scorers, but also the people that make the team as strong as they would be.
Mm-hmm. Look forward to that. That's good stuff. I'm glad that we can add that this year, Bruce.
That I was going to say, that's going to be our first soccer team.
Derek. All right. I know Derek had mentioned some different kids last year and highlighted and so forth. But the way John's describing the team there and something, I'm hoping that can be something that we really take year to year and do.
Taking the podcast to the next level, John Bruce. We appreciate that. Hey, guys, we've got a long agenda, so let's get right at it. This week's football discussion, as we move into it, is sponsored by Crown Hill Golf Club. And the weather's still kind of hanging on there. We went from 90 to 55 or something like that over the last couple days, but I think things are going to brighten up after the first part of the week, and you might have a chance to get out to Crown Hill Golf Club, located at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Give them a call at 740-986-4653 and just describe to them what you're looking for up there, because they treat our SVC Sports Talk listeners well. You can look them up on the web at crownhillgolfclub.com, and they will do their best to accommodate you, as they typically do. They are a big supporters of the SVC athletes, SVC Sports Talk, and we really do appreciate them. Guys, the football discussion is going to follow the same kind of format that we've been doing now. I think this is the past 3 weeks for football. We kind of skipped one and I think we did volleyball there for a while, and prior to that was football. But it follows the first down, second down, third down, fourth down philosophy. And each of these represent a headline that I'm going to go to one of you for. So as we always do, we're going to start with our first down. Let's see. Last week, I think I went to Shane first. So I'm going to go to John. Plus, you know, his were so exciting last week, such full of puns and you know, intellectual references and so forth, mm-hmm. that I expect nothing less this week, John, as we go to your headline for first down.
Well, I'm just going to do like what I do with my family. I typically disappoint them. So just going to throw that out there in advance. So maybe
okay.
It won't be as good. We're going to.
Okay.
Not to get too personal.
Okay.
Obviously. Yeah. So my first down, Bryce baby, Newland's clutch fourth down play vaults the Bearcats over the Panthers. So we talked about it. Me and Shane did at the game. They had a fourth and goal from the 8 late in the first half. Hmm. Bryce Newland steps up in the pocket, avoids a sack, and is able to find Caden Grubb for a huge touchdown late in that first half. And ends up being an 8-point difference in the game. He also ran for a 2-point conversion. That's a play he wasn't going to make last year. He worked hard this offseason, got himself in better shape, got himself more mobile, and it's a huge play in an 8-point game. Now, obviously, you know, the running attack, the Cerberus of Eisen, Cockrell, and Mettler were huge. They finished with 288 yards on the ground on 42 carries and 4 touchdowns. That'll play against anybody. Mm-hmm. And then you have Newland finding Cruz McFadden, the Crabtree kid, Mackie McDonald, just making plays. That offense has so many different weapons that, you know, they're very exciting. And watching that first half against Southeastern, nobody was getting stops. So they were. That was the closest they came to getting stopped in that first half, and that huge play by Newland boosts them to the win. They'll play for a chance to win at least a piece of the title this week up at Westfall, which will be the first since 2014 for them. And that's a team that is completely – they've earned it, mm-hmm. with what they've played so far. So,
okay.
Really impressed by them.
All right, good. Shane, are you going to do your usual job, or have you kind of – one up John here, given that he pretty much burnt you last week?
Well, for first down, we're going to go with Great Scott. Keller's kids are coming.
There we go.
We always say in coaching that year two, when you're building a program, is probably the biggest step or the biggest change that you see. And I think it's fair to say Scott Keller certainly doing that there at Huntington. We know about the individual talent of McCloskey. We know what Beeler and Kinzer and Knowles and some of these kids, Halbaugh in the passing game, have done. Even Baker in the running game last week, starting to give just a hint of some running back threat on that read option to keep everybody honest. But really, it's beyond that for me, John. It's more about what just they're doing as a program in terms of their 5 wins, mm-hmm. now. They're blowing out teams early in the year that they are simply more talented than that team. But now what they do the other night on the road, this is a program that just wasn't over the last couple of years going to find a way to win that game. And they get behind, I think, what, 22-14? Mm-hmm. Huge penalty on a punt. You love Coach Gallion's interview the other night. He just flat said it. You know, we did it. It was our fault. It brings the punt back. They had to punt again. Bad snap results in a safety. Now it's 22-16. Huntington scores late to tie it. If I understood what was going on there, right, they were going to kick it. And then there was a mishap with the play, and McCloskey and Beeler just simply made a play. And again, that's what you expect of your, you know, of your big time players to do in big time spots. And yeah, to me, it's just another example of how this program's coming. I mean, don't look now. I mean, it's still a tough road, but I mean, they have some big schools on the schedule left. They're lurking in terms of the playoff picture. So it's something that I know the defense has struggled along as maybe Coach Keller's really, really trying to increase the numbers. He's talked a lot about that and not trying to go both ways and keep guys fresh. But the other night is the Pack Delidle combination was just killing them. I think it was 3 touchdowns. The report I got late was McCloskey played some defense, and that's something that he has not done. And he made some big plays in the pass defense as well. So credit to Coach Yates, Coach Keller in terms of, you know, going against what they, you know, they might be trying to do in the long haul to in that moment get your best athletes on the field and try to win a game. So Piketon certainly improving and in a position to win the other night, but give Huntington credit because they find a way.
All right. Let's head to our second down. On this one, we're going to go to Shane first.
Well, as you guys know, we don't really talk about these before the show. Obviously, John and I spent the game together the other night, so we're talking about maybe some of the same things. But listening to John there in the beginning, he and I were certainly on the same track. I'm going to go with Bryce be nimble, Bryce be quick. The PV offense is starting to click.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I lost this week.
Yeah.
It's over.
So we've talked now for about 3 or 4 weeks, John, about what we love about the Paint Valley running attack is how you have 3 different types of runners that can all kind of impact the game in a certain way. The inside running game with Mettler, say, against Uniota, we didn't think was there. But, man, Eisen and Cockrell were just dynamite to the outside, just off tackle and so forth. The other night, Mettler in the red zone was obviously very efficient. You could tell Southeastern really was keying in on Eisen, but then, you know, Cockrell breaks loose. Cockrell, what ended up being the game winner, I think, gosh, he broke 11 tackles, and I think the only reason he didn't break 12 or 13 is Southeastern only was playing with 11. You know, it was one of those where he was just relentless down the middle of the field to the end zone. And, you know, Newland really has made some great plays. You've talked, John just talked about the fourth down play. It was a huge, huge play in that game. To a player in Grubb making a play, Chapman on the outside a little bit, McFadden with his speed, and then, you know, we talked about McDonald. Remember in the second quarter, John, where he was kind of over the middle there making plays. You just get a sense that somewhere down the stretch in one of these SVC championship games or a playoff game that he's going to come late first quarter, early second quarter, and he's just going to make a play in space that's going to be a game changer. And it's just those are the types of weapons. That this team has. We ended up seeing it with Davis in the Uniota game. So, I mean, there's so many things. But, you know, we talk about these skill kids, guys, and I think the people that we don't mention, we mention them by, you know, their group name, offensive line a lot of times. But I don't think I take the time enough to really say the names. The other night in the first quarter, the job that Nick Mills and at center and Caden Smith and Petey Bowles and Morgan Hacksaw Wilson and some of those guys were doing there in the middle of the line, I mean – John, remember we commented some of the Paint Valley backs would have literally been averaging 7-8 yards a carry and touch football. I mean, it was incredible the job they were doing. You know, tackles, I know Brock Hill, John Alley, and if Adam Fowler's played some, even the tight ends, Colton Skaggs, who did a really good job on special teams the other night, Justin Drace, Caden Johnson. I'm probably missing somebody, but those are just some of the names I wanted to throw out there. This is a really complete team. And they're on the verge of taking care of business in the league. They still have 2 incredible challenges ahead of them, though. And then I saw on the points they've certainly clinched, but I know, you know, they're hoping to take care of more business and make sure they're playing there in Bainbridge come week 11.
All right. That is Shane's second down headline. Let's go to John for his second down headline.
All right. This Adema offense sure is a sights to see. Over the past 3 weeks, the Warriors have put up 145 points, 49, 48, and 48. Just really impressive totals, especially this week doing it against a Zane Trace team that's had a very strong defense all year. Preston Sykes has been outstanding at quarterback. This week he had 157 yards total offense between rushing and passing, 3 touchdowns. Finding Caleb Folkesong, Carson Long for big plays. They only had 3 completions, but I mean, 3 big plays and a touchdown pass. The running backs have been very good. Dalton Metzler, Dakota Cottrell, and Nate Throckmorton. Throckmorton's been, just looking at the numbers, he's been a monster this year. I mean, the sophomore, he's a strong, fast runner. You know, he's just from watching him in other sports, that kid's relentless. So it's not anything surprising to me. Then obviously in the kicking game, they're very strong there. All of a sudden they are, if they win the last 2 weeks, they share the SVC title or possibly have a chance to win it outright.
Right.
They big game on Friday at Southeastern, to keep their championship hopes alive. The way that offense can play, I mean, man, they're a year ahead of schedule, and I'll talk about it in my fourth down with their playoff hopes, but that's a very dangerous team that's putting up a lot of points.
All right. That is John's second down headline. So now we go back to John for third down.
All right. So much like Chris Hemsworth as Eric the Huntsman, of course, Elijah McCloskey leads the Huntsman on a gallant quest to come back against the Red Streaks on the road. Just a lot like, Shane said, we're kind of on the same page on a lot of this. You know, after the bad snap on the punt, you know, Huntington gets within six, and then McCloskey takes it down the field. They score. I mean, Elijah McCloskey, I'm going to watch him this week. It's going to be the first time seeing him this year. I'm very excited to see him. Just with, you know, receivers like Haubau and Seth Buehler and DJ Kinzer, that offense is going to be very tough to stop for Uniota. And they've been tough for everybody to stop. It appears their defense is playing better. And that's, like you said, it's Coach Keller, you know, his second year. He gets those kids to buy in. He's a Huntington grad. He knows those kids. He's he's a great coach. I mean, first off, I mean, I coached against him in JV baseball this year, and he had those kids. Those kids were playing hard. They were struggling, but they were playing super hard for him. I'm not even sure if Scott played baseball, but
yeah, he did. He was a good player.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was gonna say he's such a good coach that he can equate to any sport too. So I'm not overall surprised by how they've been doing this year, but at the same time, like you said, that type of game on Friday where they're trailing late is a game they've struggled with in the past, and you can just tell the difference that program is starting to make. It's exciting for them to get to 500 at least for the year, and they have two big games to finish, and they still have an outside chance at the playoffs.
All right. That is John's third down. Shane, what say you for third down?
Well, real quick on John's there. That's a great point. I think that Uniota offensive line is going to be quite a challenge for them. But from John, what we've seen on the outside, Huntington will certainly have some opportunities in the passing game if they can protect their quarterback. So
yes.
For third down, Bruce, I'm going to go old school Battle of Blues. This Friday night with Southeastern in Edina, what a throwback style of game this could be. I mean, this is your blue and white of Southeastern, the two shade blue of Edina. I mean, you're going complete old school. Yeah, if in the perfect setting, it would rain a little bit. You get a little mud on the face mask. I mean, it's going to be, you know, you're going to run it tough between the tackles, some dirt and blood. Yeah, you got number 25 playing quarterback on one side. You got number 95 running routes on the other. I mean, it is. I mean, it's. If you're one of those guys that played in the 70s or 80s back, you know, back when I played, we ran it between the tackles and slapped them in the face and made them like it. I mean, this is going to be your style of game, but it's going to be with a little bit of modern flair. I mean, Ruby and Sykes have combined that old style of football of these programs, and they've put their modern twist on it, so to speak, man, it's fun to watch. I mean, I love it. The Nestor and Thurston on one side, Throckmorton, Metzger on the other. John, I made the comparison the other night, seeing Southeastern in person for the first time in quite a while. The Winfield kid's a good football player.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he gets involved defensively. He flies to the ball, and he usually arrives with some bad feelings. I mean,
yes.
he'll hit you. The catch he made over the middle the other night shows his versatility. And I made the comparison to Fogelsong in terms of you have these football players that just – it doesn't matter, offense, defense, special teams, whatever you ask them to do, they're just good football players. And I think that's going to be an incredible game to watch. I really do. It's It's probably, you know, the elimination game in terms of the league. I won't go as far to say elimination in the playoffs, John, but what's funny about it, they both control their own destiny, but we have three SBC teams inside the top, what, eight right now? Mm-hmm. Four inside the top 10. So we're getting so much of this beating up on each other. I won't call it an elimination game, but man, what an important game in terms of not only, you know, staying in the league race, but also in this playoff chase as well. That should be a lot of fun, Bruce.
All right. And I think it's supposed to rain actually on Friday night, Shane. Way off in the future, but
that would be perfect for that particular game.
There you go. Okay, heading to fourth down. Shane, you're up first.
I need a week 11 reservation for four, please. As we look to week 11, as we look at the SVC, we're wondering, can we get half of the league? I mean, when you think of the history of SVC football, I don't know how long it's been since we realistically have been talking this way as late as week 9. You know, Paint Valley's clinched. Edina Southeastern controlling the own destiny, as I just said. Uniota still right there in the mix. And John, wouldn't it be something with everything they've been through in the last, say, what, 9 quarters of football, if they somehow found a way in the final 2 weeks to earn their way back to the playoffs as that football program continues to grow? But then on the other side of that Uniota matchup this week, you look at Huntington and what they're trying to do in their program. They have two big schools left with Uniota and Zane Trace, and that's worth a lot of points. We talk a lot about beating teams and who they beat and secondary points and all that. I mean, a lot of your big points come right up front just beating the big school regardless of what their record is. So it's there's some big things. Don't even count out like what Westfall's doing when you consider they have the computer points of a Paint Valley and a Southeastern still remaining out there. So there's a lot going on. I'm going to throw out that number of four guys and track it. I think that's a stretch. I think two's the safe bet. I think three is still probable. I think four is a stretch, but let's go ahead and some wishful thinking maybe, John, and throw it out there to leave some scheduling situations that you and I might have to really get creative with come week 11.
All righty. And, John, your fourth down headline.
Well, I'm going to take a little further on Shane, but I'm going to go back to Jim Mora of playoffs.
Nice. Playoffs. Yes.
So, you know, there's a extremely reasonable chance to think that we're going to get four teams in the postseason. If I'm just looking at, and I'm going to go with Drew Pescher's fantastic50.net website, which throughout the week, he's started to update it as Joe Attell's getting his, or Joe Idol is getting his scores in. I mean, he's updating it with all these simulations and it's like 10,000 simulations, and it runs the chances each team could win. I don't know why it needs to be 10,000, but it that's what it is. So right now, Paint Valley is a lock. I mean, they're not an extreme lock to host. If they would lose their last two games, they still would have a better than 65% chance to host. So when one of the two, they're hosting a week 11 game. Right now, if they win both, they're going to be the one seed, which, you know, is very obviously reasonable, as they already know. Southeastern, 99% chance to make the playoffs right now. If they lose their last two games, they are 93% to still make it. So they have, I mean, beating the bigger schools, like you mentioned with Huntington, Southeastern has more or less put themselves into a lock. If they win their last two, they're a very good chance to host. So, you know, that's still available for them. Edina is a 99% chance. Their win against Marion Elgin, when they just put it on them on that Saturday night, is looking better and better, because Elgin's won three of their last four. And they should win their last two. So that's big points.
That makes sense. That was a good football team. That's what was so impressive about that. Yeah.
And they just hammered them. So, I mean, that kind of opened my eyes to them on that, was with Edina early. Now, if they lose out, you know, they have Paint Valley and Southeastern. they're still at a 96% chance to get in the playoffs.
Wow.
Because, yeah, this is the league has done so well, or did so well in the non-league, that it's really making our league have a really good chance to make playoffs with all these teams. Uniota, they have to win at least one of the last two to really secure themselves. I think they're almost there. There's a very low chance to get a home game. A lot of stuff has to happen, but if they win their last two, they're like a 97% chance to be in. So then crazy stuff would have to happen. Now, Huntington that you mentioned, right now on that site, they're a 4% chance to get in the playoffs. But if they win their last two, they're up to, I believe it's a 75% chance. So, you know, it's very good chance if they can win those last two, because they're playing the bigger schools, that are get them some points. And, you know, it'd be, I mean, the league has never done four in one playoff season. We've gotten three. I think we did three a couple times. But if we got, if we could get four teams in with an outside chance at five, it was just – it's awesome for the league as it's building, and we have a lot of underclassmen that will be returning, and it's a lot of stuff to build on, a lot of good things in the SEC this football season. And I'm excited to watch how these last 2 weeks play out.
Imagine a situation where, like in a 1-8 or a 2-7 game, if Paint Valley played one of the SVC schools, you think anybody would attend that game?
It'd be a decent crowd. Yeah.
Good football discussion there, guys. It's, of course, been brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club. Again, their telephone number, 740-986-4653. Give them a call and tell them SVC Sports Talk sent you. You know, with the Volleyball League finishing up this past Thursday night, that means we now know our final standings, and that means it's time for Shane's All-League Selections.
Darker Shane, darling, darker Shane, thank you for all the joy and pain. Picture show.
It's time to move into the volleyball, and this is brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe, where we care. They're open 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 9 to 12 on Saturday. And they, of course, they have the resort as well for dropping off your pets there for a little R&R for them or for you. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's North Fork Animal Clinic, 773-PETS, 773-7387. They're the official veterinary practice for the Stars, including our own John Bruce. He drops his cats off there quite regularly, I understand, John.
Yes.
Yeah. So we appreciate them bringing us into volleyball. So as we get into volleyball, Shane, of course, the big match this past week. What say you about the reaction to that Uniota Southeastern match?
My first take on it, guys, was just the effort and the competitive spirit which Uniota played with. Their size and their length, when they play that hard, their blocking was phenomenal across the net. Their defense, not just the normal defense you get from a Pinkerton and a Cottrell, but even their ability to use that length with the one arm out here, the one arm out there, just keeping a ball alive, keeping it off the floor. When they play that hard, man, it's something to watch. Obviously they've been a little inconsistent throughout the year, but that was their night there. They certainly proved to be the better team in the head-to-head matchups. But, you know, you get Southeastern, a lot of credit to them. They were a little bit shell-shocked there, I felt like, in the first 10 to 15 points of the first set. And that little run of Alexis Miller and Josie Fisher serving, that was what was interesting, guys. Remember I highlighted the serving? Mm-hmm. It was Uniota kind of turning the page on them a little bit. And going with some tough spots. Miller and Fisher hitting some tough spots, stretched that first set out to 11-6. And at 11-6, that was pretty much the difference when you look at the rest of that set being played out. Southeastern certainly stepped up and responded, played a really good second and third set. I mean, what a special night of volleyball. There was a couple back and forth there. I know there was a couple different rallies where Pinkerton and Heiss exchanged a couple back and forth defensive plays. And I remember just thinking, like, I was laughing at my seat, like, how fun's this? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, just it was just mm-hmm. incredible to watch. There's about three or four straight balls where you're thinking just about anybody else on their schedule, that ball would have hit the floor two or three times already in this rally. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't. It was really good. And then, you know, as we moved into the third or fourth set, it was time for Amanda McGlone to shine. She was terrific. I know she's battled some injuries throughout the year, maybe hasn't had quite the year we would expect in terms of statistically or consistency throughout. But again, in fairness to that young lady, I think you have to remember what she was coming back from, mm-hmm. what she fought through all year. And man, when it was championship time, did she ever step up? So I thought Goble was good. I thought Goble was chasing the ball around. The Southeastern struggled to pass early in the match. To her credit, she continued to compete hard and do a lot of things. And you know, she was terrific. And there's just a little bit too much Unio to size at the net is probably what I would come back to there and give them the nod. Good thing for our league is one goes D2, one goes D3. Two really, really good teams. And, man, let's not look past, though, what Southeastern did this year, guys. 1989. Maybe I'm a little small school biased or whatever because of, you know, my career at Paint Valley or whatever. But what they've done at Southeastern there is terrific. Take nothing away from Uniota because they were in a must-win situation and they responded to get their piece of the title as well. But two really, really good volleyball teams.
John, I got a question for you. You know, mm-hmm. we had the shared title this year, but do you agree that it should be shared when one team sweeps the other, as we have here?
In this instance, yes. I think because we don't play an unbalanced schedule, everyone plays the same teams. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just because of head-to-head, but you can't punish Southeastern for beating everyone else when Uniota had the two losses to the other schools. Mm-hmm. So I think it should be a shared title in that instance. Maybe in some of these leagues that are unbalanced that maybe you don't play everyone the same. Mm-hmm. But in this instance, I think it is. It's just two outstanding teams. It was really fun volleyball to watch on Thursday. And, you know, two really well-coached teams. And you could just tell the emotion both teams were playing with, too. And it was I'm happy that they're able to share the title.
Okay. Shane, what about you? Same question. Do you agree with a shared title when one team sweeps the other?
I 100% agree with the co-championship. And the reason being, if you know, if we're talking about like last week, we were talking about seeding and so forth, I that becomes more of subjective. That becomes more of like for people that maybe don't follow what we're talking about here, think of like you might be a college football fan, how subjective that is in terms of how they – you sit at a table and argue back and forth about this, and but in this case, like John said, you're going through the same gauntlet of the SVC volleyball, and okay, well, head to head, you did do this, and it was very impressive. But in the other 12 matches, you didn't get it done. You see what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. where the other team did. So I think at the end of the road, if you end up at the same, it's the same. So I 100% agree. With the co-championship that the SVC is always honored in this particular instance.
All righty. Well, it's time for us to move into the all-SVC volleyball segment. And I'm going to let Shane describe first the format and also his opening thoughts as he moves into this.
Well, guys, no secret, this is one of my the most enjoyable things I do all year long. I take it very serious. I know we joke a lot on the podcast, but this is something I really put hours and hours into throughout the year, watching kids. I set my schedule up to try to make sure that I get, you know, at least three or four, sometimes as many as five, six, seven looks at each kid, each team, and really look. I do it in a much, much different format than the league. As good as our volleyball is in our league. I hate the way our league does all league and volleyball. They just do kind of a blanket one team and throw it out there. And I don't think they name enough kids. When you look, I've shared this before for people that are new to the show. When you look at the percentage of starters that a basketball league gets to name, some of these are up as high as 38% of your starters, where volleyball's down at a much, much lower clip. So what I do is three teams of seven so that I can match. I base that on basically with the libero and today's rally scoring and the faster set style of volleyball we play. Most teams are looking at a team of seven in their starting lineup that kind of rotates in and out, you know, in terms of the way the libero's used. And based on that across the league, I come up with the number 21 to kind of match the percentage that basketball gets to name. So volleyball certainly right there, as we've said many times, you could argue it's our best sport. Some of us in the ring would have an argument, you know, back and forth with you, but it's certainly one of our top two. But man, I just don't think they name enough. So guys, that's the first thing that I would say in my opening statements, why I do that. The next thing is, people that have listened over the years know this. For people that are new, I'm the first to admit I'm probably a little bit biased to the kid that plays all the way around in some instances, not always, but in some. I certainly have a setter bias. My point guard background, as I learned the game of volleyball about 11, 12 years ago, my eye kind of sees the position with everything working around it. And I'm probably one, maybe this is the coach in me, John, I'm probably one that thinks that career can impact my thinking too, that longevity, when I've seen kids over the years do it and take on different roles and so on. I always get the question of standing. Can that persuade? I think somewhat in a tiebreaker. I don't know. If you have better players, you have better players. But I do think sometimes you do have to be careful when you start getting teams that finish two, three, four games ahead of another team. You know, there's got to be a reason for that. But at the same time, I understand that kids can do what they're asked to do, and maybe their overall team's just not good enough against some of the others. But then the only closing remark I'd make, Bruce, before you get me started, is we've had so many comments about the SVC this year. Mm-hmm. If you want to say that the SVC is a little bit down by the standard that the SVC volleyball has set over the last 20 years, and that's fair, but be careful on your wording, because if you start saying that the SVC is weak, that's borderline not smart. I don't know what way to say that in a nice way. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're talking about a league that continues to set the standard every year. Like, I just read the other day, Fairfield, Leesburg over in the Shack, the Southern Hills Athletic Conference, they won the league with an undefeated season. And again, congratulations to those young ladies. I'm not taking anything away from them. But do you realize in a year, guys, that Paint Valley beat them? So you're talking about an undefeated team that won their league. And you're talking about a team in our league that didn't win a game. And when they played head-to-head, Paint Valley beat them. So, I mean, you're just talking about an entire different level of volleyball. And so if you want to critique them hard, then that's fair. That's fine. But just be careful with your word choice sometimes, or you're starting to be really unfair to the incredible volleyball that's played in our league.
All righty. Well, let's head to it there, Shane. First up is the coach of the year.
Well, at the coach of the year, I'm going to go with Southeastern's Jimmy Hutton, and I certainly want to give a shout out to Coach Davis there at St. Trace, and then obviously Natalie Stolle at Uniota. She's in her second year. She wins two league titles. She's 40-4, so she's obviously done everything you had ever asked. So again, if I get the list later in the week, and I always try to, I like doing this show before I even hear about the regular list. I know some coaches are sending it in to me later this evening, and I'll take a look at it. But I always try to hold off because I want to do this from scratch. If either one of those coaches would be coach of the year, I certainly could not argue at all. I would congratulate them and say well deserved. Just for my list, I guess John, I'm going with a little bit more of a Jimmy Hutton over what he's done in the process here. And again, if I'm being small school biased, tell me. I just feel like at 62-13 the last 3 years, this has been a long time coming. And the only thing I would say to people is, if it's that easy to do, then why hasn't someone done it at Southeastern the last 30 years?
Exactly.
So that would be my only X factor there, guys. But man, Stolle Davis, if you wanted to go there, Bruce, I certainly couldn't complain.
All right. And, So that's the coach of the year. Let's head now to your player of the year.
Four players on the radar here, guys. I was looking at a pair of Panthers, Skylar Heiss and Lauren Goble were up for it. Then what's weird here, Bruce, if you don't mind, care if I kind of give you my defensive player of the year in here as well.
Sure.
So that I can explain how I arrived there. The defensive player of the year is also going to play a factor in this. I was also looking at Uniota's Hallie Pinkerton and Zane Trace's Evie Bennett. Those are probably the four. I certainly had a couple other kids on the radar throughout the years, but that's kind of in this last week where I got it down to. Well, what's in the middle of all this is I'm not real familiar with the actual voting procedure that the volleyball uses. I've been in several of these rooms, several sports, but now that we use such a special award like Defensive Player of the Year, I don't even know if it's mathematically possible on the official list to win both of them, because if you win the first one, I don't even know that you would be on the board for the other one. Now, the beauty of this list on here, I've always said it's just a fat dude talking volleyball on a podcast show. I can do whatever I want. You know what I mean? Like, it's but for me, I certainly Bennett and I certainly see Pinkerton at the top of that defensive list as well. So the way I started to sort it out, guys, is I started there with that defensive player of the year, and I go with Pinkerton. Yoda. I just think she's terrific. She statistically is going to be good, but you have to eyeball test. I mean, you have to go far beyond that, you know, on the serving, and even some of your better teams on the attack, I know, are trying to go away from her. As you start to see Cottrell and Fisher's numbers go up, a lot of that has to do with them maneuvering the ball, you know, away from her and so forth. She made a couple of plays the other night in that Southeastern game that were just ridiculous. You know, when I think back over the years of watching kids like Elena Lytle, Carol, and a long list of kids there at Dina, and some of those kids, you know, had some great defensive players in our league, and I know I'm missing a ton, but Pinkerton's really growing into that class, in my opinion. She just does a tremendous job with her quickness, and so I'll go there. And that certainly brings Bennett into the overall discussion. Along with Skylar Heiss, Bennett's a kid statistically kind of wins that part of it. You know, when you look at what she does with the hitting, with the defense, with her serving, the knock on her might be a little bit of her consistency. But again, I think with her aggressiveness, it's that risk reward of volleyball we always talk about. I certainly respect the situation. Efficiency could sometimes be higher. That's fair. But again, what a great player, not afraid of the moment at all. Has played really big on the big stage. And then, you know, Skylar Heiss, here's a kid, John, we talked about leadership last week, her composure with body language to her teammates, her intensity and competitiveness, her intelligence and her IQ, the way she talks to her teammates in big spots, she impacts the game in every certain way. So, She's certainly a contender as well. But my player of the year, guys, I'm going to go with Lauren Goble, player of the year from Southeastern. When she pushed over 2,600 assists, became the all-time leader. As I said a couple weeks back there, when you consider the history of our league, when you start becoming a person to do it the most of anyone to ever play, that's saying something, that longevity. She's 19-3, first place in the SVC, first school title since 1989. You look back through her career now, 20-6, sophomore year, 23-4. It says a 5-1 setter. She's just now getting to the 12 or 13 loss level, you know, in terms of a 5-1 setter. So, if anyone comes back with the name Pinkerton, Bennett, Heiss, any of those, Bruce, I can't complain.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, again, I may be biased. I may be small school biased. That's just kind of the way I thought long and hard about it. I'm going to go Goble, player of the year, Pinkerton, defensive player of the year. And then I guess I've kind of already given away the way I did that. Evie Bennett and Skylar Heiss would obviously be on my first team as well at this point.
John, do you feel all teams should be represented on the all-league team?
I'm going to try to be as political as I can on this. No.
Why?
No. I'm going to be nice.
Okay.
But we have honorable mention for a reason.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not We're not just giving away awards. Honorable mention, typically, I mean, usually every team has someone that is good enough to be mentioned, but maybe isn't good enough to be in the top two teams, or I guess with volleyball and just the one gigantic team. So, I mean, really, these all SDC should be like first, second, third team, whatever the sport is, should be for the top players. And it should just be, oh, you played on this team. Like, oh, your team didn't have success. Now, if you look at Payne Valley, they should be represented by a couple. They have a couple strong. So just because they didn't win any league games doesn't mean that doesn't mean they shouldn't be represented.
Right. But, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, so, well, this year, I believe every team is going to be represented. It shouldn't just be, oh, you should be because your team played in the league.
Right. I see.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Shane, why don't you head to the second team there, and we'll.
Well, I guess I cut off on you there a little bit. Yeah. I cut off on you a little bit there because the way I did the player of the year, I still have my last three in the first team, don't I? So, yeah. We had Goble and Pinkerton, Bennett and Heiss, and then I guess it kind of works to do it this way because I can kind of give the fans some of my thinking here. Okay. I basically have about 6-7 kids that. Again, the level of play in our league, I had 6-7 kids you could probably put into this first team discussion. I thought the two no-brainers were Josie Fisher of Uniota, Riley Black of Huntington. Both of those kids were on my player of the year radar really throughout the majority of the year. Josie Fisher really added the all-around part of her game. She's always been terrific at the net. Keep in mind this, too. With Josie, athletically, with her moving to the back and passing and serving, her and Amanda McGlone's stats may not be what people thought because Uniota kind of tweaks their rotation in a unique way where those kids are on the front row a little bit together. You know, so with a lot of teams where if they were opposite of each other, their number of swings would go way up. And I know that makes sense to a lot of volleyball people. So, but for people that aren't as fans of the game and don't understand what I mean, you only get three rotations across the net, and then you either come out of the game if you can't pass, or you go to the back row to pass. So, the fact that they're not opposite of each other. When they're up there in the front, it's just kind of like the Paint Valley football offense. You have three running backs and one ball. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where you're only going to get so many swings. So, you know, statistically, you got to look far beyond that when you start evaluating some of these Southeastern Uniota kids. And then Riley Black, she's been tremendous. You know, keep in mind we've made a lot, John, and rightfully so, out of the Zane Trace team this year. You know, Zane Trace being 9-5 of the league. Well, guess what? Huntington is in the league. They're 9-5. You know what I mean? And a big reason why is Riley Black, and a big reason why is Huntington beat Zane Trace twice. So Riley Black is certainly cemented right there on this first team and right where she belongs there. She stuffs the stat sheet in a lot. And then this was where it was really tough. I started getting in, and I'll kind of start to lead into my second team too here, Bruce, where it got tough. I'm going to go Amanda McGlone. And to me, the last – match was probably the difference. I hate to become a prisoner of the moment, but with what was on the line, when I started looking, Jess Boldy, Southeastern, Hannah Unger, Zane Trace, Maddie Rand, Zane Trace, Braden Collins, Huntington, Hannah Phillips, Westfall, Miranda McCloskey of Huntington, and then Leah McFadden, Paint Valley. Those are my second team. I'm going to push Amanda McGlone to that last spot on the first team because I just feel like she was the X factor in that particular match and for kind of in the sharing of the title. Again, Jess Boldy, Hannah Unger, for sure. If you had them up on first team, I had them on my first team list probably as late as midweek and really all week or all year, excuse me, because, you know, Evie Bennett is tremendous. Don't get me wrong. I've talked about her already, but keep in mind, Unger and Rand of Zane Trace, equally impressive. Keep in mind, Zane Trace took Southeastern 4-1 night when Bennett didn't play. So, you know, Bennett is a crazy, crazy talent, special player in our league. Unger and Rand certainly deserve this credit as well. And Jess Boldy, what she's been a part of in the Southeastern rebuild and being a part of a championship team. So any of those types of names that stretch up. So just to clarify there, that was Goble, Pinkerton, Bennett, Heiss, Fisher, Black, McGlone on first team, which on second team moves Boldy, Unger, Rand, Collins, Phillips, McCloskey, and McFadden. My thinking there, Braden Collins and Leah McFadden, I want to talk about them for a second. I've had a lot of had a lot of volleyball coaches tell me that, you know, they're asked to do a lot for their team. Kind of small school volleyball, right? You know, Leah McFadden jumps in, sets a little bit, hits a little bit, does whatever she has to do. Braden Collins the same way. These are two defensive players, and they both are 1,000 digs in their career plus. These are two defensive players. I've had a couple of volleyball coaches say that if all they had to do is concentrate on defense, they would be 1,500, 2,000 dig type of kids. Mm-hmm. They're that good. So I think that speaks high praise. And then Hannah Phillips is a no-brainer talent-wise, and Phillips kind of got off to a slow start. I don't know that it was necessarily her individual fault. I just think volleyball collectively, sometimes you go through some injuries, you're trying to get in scheme, into system. She certainly has come on the second half of the year. And then you've heard me talk about Miranda McCloskey. I think she really seemed herself in here in the second team as well with what she's done. So feel pretty good about my first two teams there to this point, and we'll move on when Bruce is ready.
I'm ready anytime you are, if you want to go ahead with the third team.
Yeah. All right, well, third team, guys, I realize I still haven't had a Lady Warrior of Edina, and here they in the standings with what they finished off the week at 7-7 in fifth place. I certainly realize that I need to get to the two shade blue here, and that's what I'll do to start my list. The problem, John, with the Dina team, and I'm sure in coaching you've seen a lot of these examples, it's you can spend hours looking at their stat sheet or watching them play or looking at your notes, and you don't even know how to sort them within their own team. So that's what makes all league very difficult, because when – I'll just give you some kids like on some honorable mention thinking here. Like when I look at – you know. Harper at 2.5 kills, Battle at 2.4. I look at a Cameron Carroll, 3.9 digs, 4.6 serve receives. She's up to half ace. I think she gets older with that serve she has, she'll get that serve percentage up with that, become really good. Even Jenna Martin was good. But to me, the two kids that I'm going to go with on third team is Olivia Riley. I think she's probably the kid when I watch them all the way back to preseason year that if I had to pick out the kid that's asked to do the most, she's probably the kid at 4 digs, 5.4 serve receives, and then 1.5 kills. It's probably been the one that's asked to do the most. And then down on the bottom of my list, since I'm on a Dean, I'll go and get to senior Reese Kearns. I know Ari Dereff with the job she does a setting too is certainly important, but Reese is a senior. I just think earns this last spot here. When you consider what she does at 3.1 digs, 4.5 assists as a 6-2 setter, but probably the X factor for me came on a night where due to a certain situation, she was playing a 5-1, and she had 32 assists, 22 digs against Huntington, and it just kind of showed me in the situation that if she was called upon to do that, she certainly could. And I know that's the case with a lot of 6-2 setters, but in that particular night, that's just what I kind of got to see. And on a young team at 7-7, I thought her senior leadership was crucial. I certainly have not forgotten about Python. When you look at the career of Macy Conley, 6 kids, I think Derek Webb's article said, have gone over 2,000 assists in the history of our league. She's one of them. So even in a year where when they lose what they've lost to graduation last year, she's certainly a good player. Some of her statistics are misleading because earlier in the year they were kind of flirting with some different ideas with what they were going to do. So that set average can kind of be misleading there. And then I would go down through your championship teams playing all the way around in a year where a lot of teams did not have a lot of kids play all the way around. I think Sierra DeLong and Amber Cottrell certainly needed to be there. DeLong is Southeastern, Cottrell Uniota. And then Westfall jumps in here with Staten and Williams. I think if you start to look at the snubs, guys, I mentioned a lot of those Adina kids. Kelsey Dunn's probably the biggest snub. Sometimes, John, what happens to me in my Paint Valley bias, I want to make sure I'm fair, but sometimes I hope I'm not cheating a Paint Valley kid. You know what I mean? I try to be fair within the standings. But Kelsey Dunn's a kid at 3.2 kills. She's certainly up there in blocks. You know, so Kelsey's a kid, does not play all the way around, but even in her serving has moved up. So if Kelsey Dunn replaced one of those Westfall kids, certainly I would be the first to cheer as a Paint Valley fan. Again, I'm just trying to mix my biased, non-biased, you know, approach here. And I understand that with the league record that some would have a problem with Paint Valley getting a second kid. So I respect that. And then you work through the teams, you know, Megan Steele, Riley Williams, Grace Lytle, some of those freshmen from Southeastern. with Lockwood, Longhi, even Skeens. Coleman and Eldridge are interesting for me at Uniota because, again, both of those kids – my setter bias, believe me, please understand, I recognize that both of those kids did exactly what their team asked them to do. If you combine them together, you'd have a really, really good all-league setter, you know, with the way they share the time. Statistics are split. The eyeball test is split. But understand, those two are certainly big pieces of a championship team. Allie Bennett, Zane Trace. I know I mentioned most of the Westfall kids. I did like kind of Latham, a nice young player there that has some links. A lot of those are honorable mention. But again, on third team there, I think with Riley, Conley, DeLong, Cottrell, Staten, Williams, and Kearns. And, you know, anytime you do one of these lists, as I said, you're always going to leave a kid or two off. I certainly would have no trouble with Kelsey Dunn being in there. It's just kind of the way I tried to be fair based on the standings, quite honestly, there at the end of my list.
All right. I know that represents a lot of work, a lot of time, and a lot of thinking there, Shane, to put all that together. And, of course, I'm sure that there are those fans out there that have their own lists, and we'd like that if they'd share that with us as well. And we'll talk about how to contact us and how to provide.
Bruce, can I interrupt you real quick? I didn't put this on the agenda. I did have one more question for John there. John, I was wondering, in your take, I mean, a lot of times when you are going through this particular thing with coaches, what would you say to the fans in terms of a lot of times maybe a value to your team compared to what makes you all league? So in other words, as a coach, what you might give a special award to at your team's banquet compared to making them all league, is there something you could share there that maybe I haven't done a good job over the last couple of years of explaining on how that sometimes separates you from an all league team compared to your value of your team?
Well, I think as a coach with your own players, you can kind of see a little bit more. And the coaches around the league, you're only going to see these kids two times against your team, and then maybe the times when you scout them. So maybe there's little things that players do that would get, you know, a team award with them, but maybe you don't see overall. Like you said, with Coleman and Eldridge at Uniota, sharing the
great example.
Sharing the setter position. You know, they're more than likely going to get hurt in that all leagues, like possibly winning an all league award. But that's something that, you know, you can have your passer of the year at your team banquet. And that's something that, you know, maybe a player goes above and beyond to help the team, and that will actually hurt them statistically or in an eye test to other coaches also.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
All right. Well, again, good job there, Shane. If somebody has some different ideas, we'd like to hear from you. We'll talk about that just in a little bit, about how you can provide that input back to us. Up next, we look at a pair of teams that saw Scarlet all weekend long, another star preparing for a third trip to Mason, and we'll see how SVC runners finished the finishing hill at Huntington. You know that, huh, John?
Oh, yeah. Before I started my pickleball lesson the other day, Tim Diamond, who was one of the kids in that class with me from Uniota, for some reason he was singing it. So that meant as I'm, like, refereeing the pickleball, I'm singing Baby Shark. It's one of the greatest songs of our generation.
It's a wonderful earworm as well.
Yes.
I was hoping perhaps with my bump selections tonight to maybe get under Shane's skin, but I'm getting no reaction. So I get a big failure for that.
you have certainly had some chuckles from me both times.
Okay. All right. Well, that was what it was intended to do. Guys, we're going to focus now on the other fall sports around the SEC, brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic and Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff. And, of course, they have the animal resort out there where you can drop off your animals for a little TLC Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then their normal veterinary practice open Saturday, 9 to 12, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. Give them a call at 740-773-7387. That's Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff, where we care, the official veterinary practice for the Stars in southeastern Ohio, including our own, our very own, John Bruce. So we appreciate their sponsorship here. Well, Shane, first we're going to take a look at the SVC Cross Country Meet. As you said, you're probably out there running right along with the kids this past week.
Well, I mean, obviously on the boys' side, guys, the Uniota team takes the top seven spots.
Yep.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You can check those names out there, led by Tucker Marto, our runner of the year. And, gosh, they run the table. And then what Coach Paxton was sharing with me is, you know, your top five score for you as a team.
Mm-hmm.
Their top seven make all league. Now, if you go down the list, it also had the 10th and the 14th runner.
Wow.
He was under the impression that they are not eligible for all league because you can only place your seven. So I put those old for you. You'll want to go down and those three kids, the Southeastern Pike and the Dean, all get some representation there. So I encourage you to go on there and check out the list, again, led by Tucker Marco, and that incredible perfection again. And then over on the girls' side, Abby Mohan leads a Zane Trace charge. I looked down through there. I think there was five schools represented. You know, John was just talking about, you know, should all eight schools be represented?
Yeah.
Well, cross country does it similar to how golf does it. Well, golf and cross country just do it basically right there on a time or a score that says you are or aren't. Yeah, I think there was five different schools there on the boys. Now I look down through the girls. Zane Trace wins it. I see Zane Trace, Uniota, Westfall, Huntington, Paint Valley, Southeastern. I can see, you know, quite a bit of representation across the board there. So check those out. I also have the junior high for boys and girls on the website there. So Huntington seemed to get some great reviews looking on throughout Twitter and Facebook. People really happy with the setup, challenging, fair, are some of the words that I heard there. But now, like a lot of our sports, the teams will split off at district level into some different divisions. And usually what that means, guys, is a lot of representation into the regional. So we're excited to follow that in the week to come. But congratulations to Uniota Zane Trace, to Marco and Mohan, but as well as the all league runners that are in bold on the website for you.
All right. On the tennis courts, John, what's the outlook going forward for our SVC athletes?
All right. So Sylvia Gray is advanced for the third straight time. She's still undefeated through regular season, sectional, district play. And she will play on Friday morning in Mason at the Linder Family Tennis Complex. If she wins, she'll advance to later in the day. A win would also mean that she would be all Ohio. They take the top eight in each division. If she wins that match, she would play Saturday in the semifinals, and the finals are also on Saturday night. So when you're there, they play Division One and Division Two. So it is split up a little bit. There's a ton of courts. So all of the players play at the same time. So the eight first-round matches all go at the same time. Now, the good news – should I go good news or bad news first?
Oh, let's go – I don't know, bad news first.
Okay, we'll go bad news. Seven of the top eight players from last year's Division II singles tournament, including Sylvia, because she was second team last year, are back, including the top four. So Hathaway Brown out of the Northeast they're just an insane program, and they have had the last five singles winners in Division II. Now, it's been two people and their sisters, but one of the sisters is a junior, and she lost to her older sister two years ago in the state championship and then won it last year. But also, she is, Sylvia has played against these girls throughout her, you know, the travel tournaments that she plays in the summer and the spring. So she has a lot of experience against them. So it won't give her any unknowns. Mm-hmm. So I guess you can say that, even though it's extremely good competition, which you would expect at the state level. I mean, sure. You're not going to have a walkover at any time. Now, I'll go to the good news. One of the really good singles players, Sylvia Goldsmith from Lexington, has moved to doubles. She has signed. She's committed for college. So probably her college has said that they want her doing doubles. So she won't be out there. And also Sylvia will face either the 3 or 4 seed from another district. Now, hopefully it is from a district that is not the Northeast, because the Northeast is extraordinarily strong and would be a very difficult first round matchup. If it could be the Northwest, she has a really good chance. I mean, obviously she has a good chance against whoever she plays, because right. She's an outstanding player. But it'd be nice to see her get a favorable matchup in that first round, just to have as much energy as she could for that second round matchup also.
All right.
So we'll be following along. And yeah,
that's on Friday, you say?
Yes, Friday. Okay. I believe they play, it's typically at like 9 or 11 for the first round match.
Okay. Well, you'll be watching Twitter there and trying to figure out what's going on Friday. So keep us up to date. Shane, it's time to talk a little golf. This brought to us again by our friends at Crown Hill Golf Club, 740-986-4653. Or you, of course, look them up on the web at crownhillgolfclub.com, and they are up in Williamsport. And again, tell them that SVC Sports Talk sent you, and they will work with you. But we're looking at Unioto and Westfall at the state.
Yeah, how fun it was to see the path that these two teams went on this year. You know, golf was again in our league, something that was supposed to be rebuilding, and in a year where it's supposed to be rebuilding, before you know it, you have the district champion and the district runner up in D2, and they're both on their way to the state. Obviously, they played incredibly difficult course with the Scarlet there at OSU, as I highlighted last week, and some of the scoring was tough. The first day, not too bad, but what happens, guys, just like when we see it throughout the year from 9 to 18 holes, when you go from 18 to 36, it really stretches out even more. And I understand some of the competition might have been overwhelming, the golf course overwhelming, but for me, and I tried to highlight this on Twitter, it was far more about the experience and the celebration of what these two programs accomplished throughout the year to get there. It is. I was kind of joking a little bit. If anyone gives you a hard time on what you shot, just say, "What did you shoot at the state tournament this year?" Right. You didn't make it. Okay, you know what I mean. So it's those where, to me, it's not about the scoring as much as it was for a chance to look back, look at what these teams accomplished in the league, what they accomplished at the district level, and then the experience. Because keep in mind, both teams have some kids back that is only going to grow the game of golf in these particular programs and what they do. So this was just more of an opportunity, Bruce, for me to say congratulations on an incredible season. If you're a senior, what a way to go out in terms of a memory. If you're an underclassman, what a great memory to kind of store in your scrapbook, but at the same time is motivation into the offseason, the chance to go. So you look, make sure you're checking out our website on the Golf Archives page to see that. Best of luck to Sylvia Gray. If you look back on our history of our tennis page, you'll see she was top 16 her freshman year. Last mm-hmm. year, she wins a game to get into that top 8 that you're talking about, John. So hopefully this year we push her a little further. Best of luck to our cross country runners as well as they go to the district. So certainly, Bruce, before we get out of here, I appreciate you always staying on longer with us each week, especially when we want to honor our volleyball kids. Keep in mind, John will be honoring our soccer kids next week. Before we get out of here, I can't imagine who would disagree with me, but if they did, if you want to give some contact information where they can let us know that, feel free.
I will certainly do that. Shane can be contacted first by email at admin1@svcsportszone.com, and on Twitter, his handle is @svcsportszone, and of course, you can always search on the hashtag SVCSportsTalk to follow along on what's going on. I know, like I said, when Friday night, you guys were lighting up Twitter quite a bit, and I almost felt like I was there. sans the food, of course. But on Facebook, he has two profiles, Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, and SVCSportsZone.com. For Mr. Bruce, you can email him at jbruce1018@yahoo.com. And on Twitter, he's John Bruce. That's his handle there, at Coconut Wall Papa, and he uses the SVC Sports Talk hashtag as well. Derek Webb, when he is contributing about the SVC, does so under the Twitter handle DWebWrites. That's DWEBBWRITES. And then his Buckeye and Ohio State content is under the verified account of DW1509. That's at DW1509 for his Buckeye news and information. So there you have the contact information, Shane. And I will tell you, I didn't tell you this off the air, but we're now well over our highest number of subscribers. So if anybody is listening to this podcast and doesn't subscribe, you'd like to get on the action, you can do so through email at dbkmediaservices.com. Or, of course, you can do it on your phone at Stitcher, or you can also do it through iTunes. So I encourage you to do that. Always could use a good review if you are so inclined.
That's good stuff. And, John, I was wanting to let the SVC fans probably know you might spread the word to the Uniota community for us, but really to our entire SVC community. Derek has a feature coming up on Jamarcus Carroll, and it's a doozy. I mean, Derek's done some really, really good work. He was telling me about some of the things in that particular article. I really look forward to that being out on the website. We'll look for that. And then I know I speak for everybody in the SVC community. I wanted to give a shout out to the England family, Dustin England, one of my really good friends. We lost Tom England this week, a special, special guy in the Zane Trace community, but really in the SVC community. So I know I'm speaking for everybody, Dustin, to you and your family, the thoughts and prayers. And I thought I would throw that out there, Bruce, to wrap us up this week. So
certainly.
Until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center and all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes in at DBK Media Services, and for John Bruce, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.